And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. And it's been a while, but we're doing another top five for you guys and your listening pleasure here today. Going into this weekend, we figured with us coming out, I don't know what's coming out first, whether this episode or the episode of our 100% accurate guessing the plot of Us, but those will be coming out in tandem with one another, this episode and that one. So we figured, as well with us coming out next week, and something we're going to give the full Oscar sprint profile treatment to and review it seriously as an Oscar contender, Mike and I wanted to go over our top five instances in horror.
Top five horror movie experiences.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, and actually what the title of this is going to be. That was also Mike. I am co-host Mike One. And Mike, what's the what's going on with this episode today? What's the genesis of it?
So essentially, the five most memorable moments you've had as a horror movie fan, whether it's because of a movie working well, working poorly, because of the experience you had in the theater, at home, watching it by yourself. Have you seen visions because of what the movie did to you? Did it send you to the loony bin? Bottom line is, what effect did these horror movies have on you? The first question I have for my co-host Mike One here, though, were you a big horror movie fan as a kid, as a younger child?
My entire life.
That explains a lot. It also, that's also the opposite of me. I was very sheltered, or at least in the sense that my family were not fans of the genre. So I didn't grow up being encouraged to watch horror films. And in fact, if I was curious, Mom and Dad would just be like, yell at us not to watch Freddy Krueger or Jason or Michael.
I had that same experience. Okay. My mother was tolerant of it. Nobody else in my family, my father doesn't watch movies, period. And my brother never liked horror to begin with. He was very scared of it. He didn't like being scared. I happened to just thrive on it. And I always found it like artistically pleasing. That, like, these people aren't really dying, and it's kind of like a type of catharsis. I can see people having enjoyment of it, and it's a way to get, like, some energy out.
That entire last sentence is something that should be a warning to authorities.
I wouldn't to the law. Go to sleep tonight if I were you. Yeah.
But everything you said before that was really cute and very good, good setup.
I will eat your heart.
So, essentially, we're just going to go through our top five horror movie experiences in a way. But I do want to, you know, preface it that because I didn't really watch all of the classics until my high school days, I don't have like memorable movie experiences going to like Jaws and theaters, or obviously to The Sixth Sense even. Like, I wasn't going to horror movies when you were going to see The Sixth Sense.
Okay, that's interesting. I was going to make that highlight myself in that kind of like classic horror or the biggest like, you know, folklore horror stories you hear of people running out of the theater of The Exorcist, people getting scared to death by the first time they saw Michael Myers, all those like historically accurate horror stories that you hear from years of old.
Yep.
It's kind of like an interesting take as to why we did that, because none of that stuff relates to us. We aren't old enough to have experienced those types of
some of those movies, but even the recent classics, I'm saying, like, I don't
right. And you're saying that applies to you even up through the 90s,
right?
Which is, you know, I think that's kind of fitting, and it kind of gives you a new angle and a unique perspective that maybe not, you know, for a younger generation or maybe people that are more our age that had to deal with these movies growing up or in our teenage and high school years through college and whatnot. Maybe some of them watched them in dorm rooms growing up, because horror was a big hit in college, at least where I was for a while there.
Definitely.
So maybe it's a different perspective rather than all the top 10 moments in horror type of countdowns that you see on the internet. Right.
This
right
is
now.
Not that. This is right. Our
exactly
top five moments in horror. And those top five moments can go in any which direction.
And just, they will.
They will. Some honorable mentions, though, from the last 2 years. I think Hereditary was a WTF-er that really sent shockwaves through us for that 3 or 4 day stretch. I think we were speaking in tongues of the devil's own.
At least Paimon's, yeah.
We did a deep dive. We did a 2-part episode trying to figure that one out. And Hereditary,
I still have a hole in my heart after what happened with her this Oscar season.
Yeah, and I rewatched that movie a couple weeks ago. It was awesome. It's great. I loved it so
much.
Such
a good performance.
So
good
much.
Movie.
What a great rewatch that was. I am sick in the head. Yeah. Mother was another one of those kind of movies in the last few years.
More polarizing traditionally. A lot of people were down on Mother. Mm-hmm. Also kind of hints at one of my experiences in my top five, the way that movie was marketed, even though it's not about that movie specifically, more about the marketing of films and horror. But yeah, we were quite high on that, and other people, a lot of people, were not.
We were high on it. It just, what it does to you worked. right? I mean, the feelings it made you feel.
It's like an acid trip, yeah.
It really just worked on all your senses for definite, right? Even if you walked out of there just say, all right, that movie affected me.
Kristen Wiig handles a gun.
Another couple honorable mentions from the last few years. It, Chapter One.
Yes.
The Stephen King movie, obviously.
Maybe the best horror remake ever? Maybe?
Now, that movie, to me, felt like a roller coaster ride. Like, me, when I got off of roller coasters as a kid, that was the experience I felt after leaving that movie. So you're right.
That feeling of accomplishment. And,
yeah, you like you withstood that barrage of scary stuff.
It was an incredible performance. Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise there, taking the mantle up from Tim Curry back in our childhood from the ABC miniseries that we're all familiar with. Just a great horror movie all around, and really modern and fresh and really cool.
Now, my nerve endings still work, though. Do your horror movie nerve endings as an audience member work? Do you jump and scare?
It depends.
And cry
it
and
totally
yell?
Depends. Stuff that would have scared me earlier, no, I'm numb to. Like jump scares for the sake of jump scares, I can pretty much predict when they're coming. The mirror scene where you close the mirror and there's nobody behind you, and then you turn and you're face to face with the demon. You could like. You get that stuff. But yeah, absolutely. There's certainly some stuff in modern horror that still gets me.
But the criticism of liberal white America through the usage of a teacup filled with tea, like Get Out a couple years ago, that movie scared the both of us in many ways. It made us laugh and it scared the shit out of us at the same time.
That is going to be a tease for something on my list.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all right. You're not hitting on it. You're good. Cool. You're around there. List.
All right, well... Bottom line, we're starting with recent movies because our number five is the same.
Yes, and this is something recent, something near and dear to our hearts, especially because Mike, being a relatively new horror fan, he's still familiar with the classics. He knew what was going on.
Relatively new, the last 18 years of my life. I'm an old bastard.
So when did you hit it? When did you start? Do you remember your first horror movie in theaters? Do you remember that or no?
That's a tough one. I don't remember.
You don't remember.
I don't have good recall, though. We've established this already.
But high school, you'd say, is when you started watching them?
High school.
Okay. So, yeah, you're talking a good decade and a half, at least, of actually being in theaters, watching these and appreciating horror movies.
I am that old,
yes. Yes, well, we both are, and we're going to kill ourselves immediately after in the spirit of horror. But last...
Early 30s.
the first entry onto this list is something we watched, and we had a whole lead-up, a whole series, too. We're talking about Halloween 2018, David Gordon Green's sequel, actually, is what I think I'll finally land on calling it.
Now, we completely got hyped ourselves up for this movie, and that's like a double-edged sword, right? Because on the one hand, we realized the Easter egg so quickly.
Yes.
Every Easter egg that was available to us, we were
salivating over it. Yeah.
We were loving every second of it. Mm-hmm. We hit it immediately that something came on screen. We're like, yes. Right. Because we just did the full series rewatch. And during that rewatch, I had watched some of those Halloween films for the first time. I watched some on loop. Because we did them like two at a time.
Yeah, there was a couple we did. Yeah, absolutely.
So I just kept playing one, playing the other, playing one, playing the other. I have no life. And basically, while we're creating our documents, waiting to record the next day, I just kept watching the Halloween movies over and over and over again. I heard voices in the middle of the night. I ignored them because that's what an adult should do.
That's weird because Michael Myers doesn't speak, so you might want to get yourself checked. But yeah, it was a feeling of personal accomplishment and pride for us because we were just in the middle of this long rewatch. Mm-hmm. And I think the ambiance of the theater in which we saw it in also added a lot to the viewing experience because we were in there and we watched people come in because, of course, I dragged Mike to the theater early because that's how I watch movies and he hates it.
We're there very early.
We watched people come in that were wearing Halloween t-shirts and Michael Myers fan gear.
Yep.
People with long beards, people that were, you know, could tell that lived their heavy metal and rock star lifestyle. That were
cooler than us.
Exactly what I'm trying to say. That were all there for the same reason. We were all just fans of John Carpenter, of Jason Blum, of Michael Myers, and of Laurie Strode. And we wanted to see what this new chapter had in store. And so people were, you know, when we were buzzing, the entire theater was buzzing about the same things. It was all experienced movie watchers that were enjoying this piece of, I guess a term could be new nostalgia together.
It really was. But there's also like a danger to that. Like we could have had expectations that were so high that this movie didn't meet them.
No question.
This movie met our expectations.
And then some.
It surpassed them because we had a great time. Look, by the way, I'm burying the lead. The highlight of the night, for me, and we've kind of mentioned this before, there is an homage to 1978 original.
Yes.
Like we've studied over and over and over again.
Yes.
I think in terms of rewatches, I rewatched that one like 5 times.
Yes.
Before we recorded that episode. I wanted to be an authority on it.
It's a great one.
And I don't know if I succeeded, but it's a great episode by us and a great movie, of course.
Yeah.
And there's an homage to one of the best scenes from the 1978 movie in the 2018 film.
My
Mike,
heart is smiling.
Everybody claps.
Yeah.
Then, without having to nudge one another, we turn and stare into each other's eyes. We have the seat between us, I think, right?
I don't know. It was a pretty packed theater. Maybe, yeah, we might
packed.
Have. I don't remember.
I think we still had...
I think I was in your lap, is what it was.
I remember differently. I think there was a seat between us.
You stroked my hair.
But you turned to me and you said, "That's fucking awesome." Not in your library voice.
No. Well, it was fucking awesome, and you needed to know that in that moment, and the rest of the theater did as well. Yeah, and that was pure elation and joy in my
It was
my
a
part.
Great
yeah.
moment. So.
And it was nice to share that with you and with everyone else in that theater, again, that made it a great viewing experience. So certainly one of the top five horror moments. I'm sorry this bordered on gushy for all of you out there, but that's the closest thing Mike and I have had to romance in years, so deal with it.
It was necessary. And really, it was the honeymoon part of our podcast. Now we're in the old married couple phase where we just bicker just incessantly.
So,
the second these microphones turn off, I will be at his throat for something and vice versa.
So let's run the rest down. We have 4 more each. Some of mine are going to be combined. We're going to walk through these one by one. Mike and I sharing our top 5 experiences in horror with horror movies. Mike, what was your number 4?
So my number 4 was in 2005. This is The Descent. This is the spelunker horror film. I love it to this day. I
that
rewatched it.
That can't be the way that word's pronounced.
Spelunker?
I thought it was spelunking.
Spelunking?
I thought so.
Spelunker? The spelunker? I'm going to say spelunker.
Whatever. Watch this movie and then you'll never want to do it, so it doesn't matter.
This is, talk about claustrophobia, talk about a good monster movie. There's a psychological thriller angle to it.
Yes.
Love the film. We'll have to do a retrospective on it at some point. That guy's been directing great Game of Thrones episodes ever since.
It's fucking terrifying movie.
Driving home, Mike, I'm shaky because I'm with my brothers at the theater during the car ride home. It's about a 20-minute ride home. I'm home from college, right, over the summer, I believe. Might be a spring break or something weird because I don't go to fun places. I went home and watched
the movies,
Descent.
Yeah.
Went to the movies with my brothers. So bottom line is I'm coming home and I'm shaky and my brothers keep hyping me up. It's like that thing where you talk about the Ouija board enough, you're going to see ghosts in the closet. I'm driving home. We're getting close to home. I see the bush in front of me move. And the car does one of those.
Oh, jeez.
I kind of jerk the wheel a little bit. I'm close to the house, but the bush moved, Mike.
Oh, God.
I don't remember what I saw, but I saw something. It could have been a cat. Could have been an opossum. I drive home into the driveway. I am afraid to leave my car. That's
oh
like,
shit!
I am just like freaking out a little bit.
That's great.
I realize I'm old enough to realize it's not what my brother was calling an orc monkey. That was the nickname.
Okay.
He just kept talking about the orc monkeys during that are in the cave.
Sounds like your brother. Yes,
sounds like my brother. That's what he was calling. And I knew, and I the hilarity or the ridiculousness of that nickname should have just dawned on me. All right.
It should have allayed your fears.
Yeah, it should have calmed them down.
Also, the fact that you yourself were not cave diving. Maybe as a preface.
How scary is an orc monkey when put in that route? Can it have a name that ridiculous and be scary?
Right.
Whatever. I would not get out of the car. My brothers basically shamed me. Their eldest.
As they should.
I am the eldest.
To be quite frankly, because you're not young at this point.
They shamed me. And finally, of course, you know, a few minutes later, I would walk back into the house. Now they're already upstairs, but I did the Sixth Sense thing where running up the stairs.
Oh yeah,
remember that
scene?
Oh, yeah. Sixth Sense. And I could not get up the stairs fast enough. Who knew if I closed the garage door or not? I don't know.
See, I used to. I always started rationalizing because I used to have the same fears, and I would watch terrifying movies like that. I couldn't turn the lights off and shit. And then I started just rationalizing in my head. And for that, I'd be like, "Well, I'm not cave diving, and I would have to be deep inside a cave for one of those things to get me."
Yep.
So as long as I'm not in a cave, I'm fine. They're not here. And so I would go on with my day because I was immune.
That's good. That's good.
But
job
that's
rationalizing.
Isn't that what perfect horror is, right? Just like it chills you to your freaking core.
It got me. It had an effect. And I know that I didn't see anything.
Right.
Or if I did see anything, I did see something, it was an animal.
Right. Or right. a ghost that's come for vengeance. Yeah.
It could have
but
been a
not
ghost.
An orc monkey.
Not an orc monkey. So I shouldn't have been afraid. You're right. You're right. I should have rationalized it away. You are more
lonely.
You are more you are more weathered with your horror movie experiences, excellent. Right?
So that was number four, being chill to the bone. Mike, go on with number three. I'm gonna hop in because I combined four and three for me together. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll go right to my three. Now, I saw the film El Orfanato in 2007 at the New York Film Festival. This is, of course, The Orphanage, directed by J.A. Juan Antonio Bayona. He recently directed the Jurassic World movie,
okay.
the sequel. He's blown up since then.
Yeah.
He did the one about the tidal wave with Naomi Watts.
This movie got a lot of love, too, The Orphanage.
Belén Rueda stars. It's a script by Sergio Sanchez. We go to set. This is me, the producer of the short film that I had just finished, and my brother, Dave, who had a part in my short film.
I remember it.
So we sat in the second to last row up top. They sit right behind us. The director's behind me. I directed the film. The writer's behind my producer who helped me write the film. And of course, Belén Rueda sits right behind my brother, Dave, and it's like serendipitous, right? We just came up with a movie. We just got it in the can. We feel great about it. And we are sitting in front of 1, 2, 3. And
right.
They're all like in the similar roles to us. And they sit behind us in that order. I couldn't believe
that's
that.
That's really cool.
That
that's really, really cool.
That was the weirdest part. So bottom line is we are watching the movie and the crowd is great. The crowd is reacting to every little thing. And before the movie, I said something to him. I said, hey, I make movies too. I forget what I said to him.
You were starstruck.
I was starstruck a little bit. I knew him going in because I did my research on the movie. And I said hello. And obviously, I turned and watched the movie with my brother. And we thought it was a cool moment. We're watching the movie. Everybody's into it. There's a huge jump scare at the act one of the film.
Oh, cool.
And huge jump scare, and everybody gasps, freaks, yells. I turn and shake my fist at J.A. Bayona, shake my fist in his face, and he just points at me with two fingers and goes, I got you.
That's awesome.
So I was just like,
that is so cool.
It was a great moment. It was a fun movie, and we had a blast the rest of the way. I still like that movie a lot.
And that's why, you know, we talk about when we interview the writers and stuff that are on this show and gracious enough to give us pieces of their time.
Yes.
That whole idea, you know, don't meet your heroes, don't meet people you look up to. If you can meet people that are passionate in the industries that they're in, that's all that matters, because they are more humanized. And they all, if you can get them talking, even for a moment, an interaction about the stuff that they're passionate about, everyone reverts to being a little kid again.
Absolutely.
It's
and it
so
was
cool.
It was to see the look on his face, noticing what effect it had on me and the rest of the audience.
That's
was,
so cool.
Was cool. Just to watch him have so much fun with it.
All right. So I combined four and three. So we're going to go from one of the coolest interactions and the highlight of what horror can be to some low lights for me. So that's a good little swinging of the pendulum there.
All right.
My number four and threes have to do with the movies 1408 and the remake of The Omen that was released in 2006.
Not great movies.
There's a reason they're together. Yes, that's true, Michael. They share similar qualities and also are not necessarily highlights, like I said. I've always loved horror. I've talked about that at the top of the show. I'm going to hit on that more in depth later. But these are two movies that I was hugely in for. I was all jacked up to see them. I could not wait.
Yes.
1408, I was super stoked. Samuel L. Jackson. John Cusack, who I wasn't in love with but was willing to give a chance to and now hate forever because of this movie.
Because you hold grudges.
I do. I do.
You're like the
especially
Japanese spirit.
Disappoint me in horror, yeah.
who played upon Michelle Geller
exactly.
and Bill Pullman
exactly.
at the beginning of that film.
He probably didn't like I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mikael Hafstrom, who just done Derailed, which was a thriller I really liked but didn't get great reviews.
Yep.
Based on a Stephen King work, how could this fail, right? 1408.
Of course not.
It was also something that taught me to look far more critically into what I was getting into, because it turns out an adaptation of a short story affords a lot more leeway than an adaptation of a Stephen King novel.
Yeah.
taking aside Kubrick's adaptation of The Shining, obviously. But
the Stephen King filmography has been up and down, yes.
Yeah, emphasis on down, I would say, certainly. And this was the most bored I've ever been in a horror movie, which is saying tons, because I'm such a fan of horror. I afford a lot of leeway, especially to like creepy, zany, off the wall horror. I'm very apologetic to the genre, so this movie, it just sucked the joy I had for the genre out of me. So much so that my friend and I had become those guys. We went with this giant group of friends. This was like, I think, my freshman or sophomore year in college.
Yeah.
And we were home for the holidays or something, so a bunch of us went. There was like 15 of us. And my buddy and I ended up Mystery Science Theater 3000-ing the movie for like from the middle of Act 1 on.
What a surprise. I can't believe you do that at movies.
People who were part of our group that knew us, that had grown up with us, like were trying to kick us out of the theater.
Yeah.
They were tired of it. So that was the first lesson I learned, into not buying the hype and getting more, looking more critically into what I was getting into.
Sure.
The Omen is a slightly different version of a similar story in that it was my first experience really taking notice of how deceitful the marketing of a movie can be. And this is where the parlay of what we talked about with Mother at the top of the show comes in. Maybe it's more of a lesson for movies at large than horror specifically, but it was this horror movie that taught me this lesson for the first time. So again, 2006, I think I'm 19 at the time. I don't know if people remember the remake of The Omen.
I do.
Vividly. Do you?
Well, I remember it.
Were you excited for it?
I was a little bit excited for it. I think I saw it in theaters.
Do you remember why you were so excited? Does that ring a bell at all or no?
No.
Okay. Let me tell you why. Liev Schreiber, 20th Century Fox, they made a push to get this movie done and in theaters at 6/6/2006.
Wow.
Okay, so we were having a movie about the son of the devil coming out June 6, 2006, once in a century, and I thought this was just a movie and a production that got it. You have this big studio, these huge stars attached, they made sure, they made a concerted effort to get it up. Surely Hollywood isn't as cynical as everyone makes them out to be. Surely they wouldn't use this release date purely as a marketing ploy to get more asses in the seats
by
people dumb enough to think that they actually understood the genre and would blindly buy tickets to this remake to make sure they were in the theaters at June 6, 2006 because they were stupid enough to sell themselves on the idea that this date only comes around once a century.
They wouldn't do that, the true believers.
Of course not. They would not. So I genuinely and honestly thought Fox got it, and when I got out, what I got was just a mess of car crashes, exorcist-stealing impalements, a weird narrative about an asteroid and black dogs, and overall just a bad movie. And it was the first time I left the theater when reflecting on a movie and was like, I think I hated that. I'm not positive. I remember being very excited for it going in, but I think I really dislike it now. And that kind of kicked off my being cynical, if you want to call it that, but also being critical of the marketing that goes into movies, and kind of was crescendoed with Mother and the marketing of the Aronofsky horror film, quote unquote, that we got in 2017. So
it's very telling. I did not realize this. I think it's just very therapeutic for us.
I was a young boy, so full of hope and optimism.
But yeah, that movie was a film without any scares. It was just like, there was like a jump scare maybe with the dog bark.
I hated it.
But it was bad. It was bad.
I hated all of it.
It was very bad.
So yeah, pick us up, Mike. Go to number two. Your number two.
My number two is an embarrassing admission.
Okay.
I blind bought Seven. All right, the movie Seven.
Quality purchase.
Brad Pitt and Voldemort and Morgan Freeman, directed by David Fincher. I bought it on DVD my freshman year of high school, I believe it was.
Okay.
It might have been my sophomore year. Sophomore would make it more embarrassing. I am newly watching horror movies, but I was not ready for the level of horror in Seven.
Oh, so you didn't even know what you were getting into.
I had no idea.
Oh,
I remember I bought like the special edition DVD, and when I opened it up, it just grossed me the hell out. On the front cover, it looked like, all right, a bunch of like, you know, rambling writings.
Right.
But once open it up, there's like all these serial killer totems.
Do you remember what spurred you to purchase it?
I heard it was a great movie.
That's it. You just heard it was a good movie.
Also, I heard it was a detective film.
Okay.
I had no idea. Like,
It is.
It's one of the best.
Yeah.
I love a great detective movie.
Okay.
Always. And I thought it was going to be more of that than just terrifying serial killer film. Well, I get through the first few Deadly Sins getting increasingly grossed out until the mid-movie.
I think we all know where this is going.
To the mid-movie climax of, I'm not going to give it away, but there is a scare that is just so earth-shattering that I shut the movie off, I threw the movie out.
What? You threw it away?
This cost me $30, and I've never had a lot of money, but I did not have money then either.
You threw the disc out?
I was so disgusted with it, and I was such a weenie. This is me being a weenie that I threw it out. I was watching this by myself. It was like a trip to Circuit City, go home by myself, watch the movie. I threw the movie out.
That's amazing.
This is terrible. So, all right. I remember feeling bad about it like months later.
Right.
It's like, wow, I really wasted that money. And that movie was good. It just scared the ever-living shit out of me.
See, in my mind, thinking of you doing it, it was all in one motion. Like, that scene happened. You're like, nope, fuck this. Grab it out.
I did.
Like, rip the DVD player out of the wall and just throw the whole fucking thing.
No. I would do that now.
Perhaps. Be gone, devil.
I was very much traumatized.
Oh, my goodness. And that's awesome.
I threw it away. I was just like, ugh. And I put on like My Little Ponytails or something. Whatever I did.
Don't say that, but all right.
I put on like Toy Story and I got over my fear. Anyway, Mike. All right. So years later, I kind of watch more serial killer films. I get more jaded, right?
Right.
This is my junior or senior year. It's not too many years later. It might be a year later. But I see Silence of the Lambs. I see a bunch of serial killer movies. All right. I got a Blockbuster membership. Let me pick up Seven again. Let me get over the hump. Let me watch that movie. I watched the movie. I loved every minute of it this time. Now I'm more weathered.
Right.
I'm tougher.
Right.
All right. I built up an endurance.
And you had that coming. I already
knew what was going to happen with that big scene, too.
Which is the biggest scare of the movie.
I still pooped a little in my pants.
Of course.
But bottom line is, I got through it, and now I love that movie. I love David Fincher. I watch all the David Fincher movies 100 times each now. Bottom line is, I was such a wimp in ninth grade, and I'm very ashamed of that, but I think that tells you what a great film that is. That movie shook me to the bone that I threw it out.
Have that sort of visceral reaction.
Yeah. In college, I got lucky, just as a little epilogue here. I found the special edition DVD on sale for $10.
Oh, there you go.
So I kind of made up a little. That means something to me because I am such a cheapskate.
You had a happy ending there. Yeah. All right. Well, that's nice. Well, again, the power of horror knows no bounds. That is an incredible story. Nope.
Done. Throw out. I'll revisit years later.
I have a bit of a happier one, too. It was, again, it's forming me into somewhat of a critic that I like to think I am today. Yeah. But my number two revolves around the Scream franchise, specifically Screams 1 and 2.
Right.
I remember the first time I saw Scream 1 vividly, very vividly. It was at my neighbor's house on VHS. He had just rented it from Blockbuster because it had just come out on VHS to rent.
Okay.
It was the middle of a random summer day. I was 10 years old. I should not have been watching this.
No, but he's a good older brother.
Well, my older brother was with me. That's why it was, because I had older neighbors. My brother was friends with them. And so it was at my neighbor's house, but I was there because of my brother.
Yes. He's a good older brother. That's cool of him to bring you along.
I felt very cool. It was me, 10 years old.
You were very cool.
Amongst all these. I wasn't, but thank you. Amongst all these older kids.
I think you're cool now. Back then, it's cool now.
My brother had already... What the hell happened to me? My brother had already seen it, and he'd hyped it up to me. I loved the idea that it was scary.
Right.
I was 10 years old. I didn't have a lot of exposure to it. And he kept saying, like, it's so scary because it's so real. It could actually happen and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
It's clearly what part of what made Scream itself such a huge success.
True.
And a refreshing slasher. So yeah, I was all in. It wasn't the first scary movie I'd ever seen. I remember distinctly having seen It prior to seeing Scream, and I wasn't like impressed by it or scared by It, the
True.
Movie.
Yeah, it's,
cause
not,
it's kind of, yeah,
it's
blah. But Scream was responsible for my falling in love with the horror genre, and that's kind of what made me the film lover of horror I am today. The wit in the dialogue, the over-the-top gore, jump scares, the ridiculously convoluted who's the killer plot,
yeah.
And even the attractiveness of the characters as 10-year-old me even then was like, you know, that girl from Party of Five is pretty cute.
Yes, sure. So you really flowered in multiple ways. You blossomed.
Yes.
You blossomed in all ways as a I was gonna say bloodlust, but and then in your lust.
Yeah, in my bloodlust specifically. Yeah, she's cute, and also I should kill her.
Your neuroses, yes. And your, you know, just natural,
yes.
Puberty.
It was an introduction to a decades long love affair that is still going strong to this day. But
I
sincerely believe Scream is still the litmus test against which I measure every slasher or whodunit mystery up to. So that began the love affair with horror, but Scream 2 kicked open the door of what was possible in movies to me that I realized, because it actually illuminated to me that people actually give a shit about a running storyline and kind of what's possible with cinematic universes and, and what a sequel could actually be as far as a running narrative and a through line through a couple movies. That's what Scream 2 did for me. We take for granted cinematic universes now. Obviously, there are kids growing up now who probably won't understand how standalone films can't plan on getting sequels. But that wasn't really the case back in the 90s, especially in horror. Obviously, the genre had been done to death in the 80s and early 90s, especially with sequels. Jason Takes Manhattan, Says Hello. The concept of a slasher being popular enough in early 2000s, late 90s, much less, you know, financially successful enough to merit a sequel, was rare.
All that's well and good. I want to get into your psyche, though, as a 10-year-old. I think, as an older brother, because I internalized your story a little bit.
Yeah.
Was this like one of the first times like him and his group of friends like accepted you as kind of cool?
They weren't like his hangout friends. We were just like, we were all couldn't drive yet, living on the same street, wandering around outside.
Walked to block.
We didn't walk to block. He had it. My neighbor had it. Okay. Yeah. And we were friendly enough with him, and we just kind of like hung out to kill a couple hours. It was either that or cocaine. And so either, we did the movies in lieu of the cocaine.
Better. So, okay.
Waited. Cocaine was 11, 12, so 13.
What your degree of cool is very different than what I'm talking about. I was talking about innocently watching a film that you thought by association might be looked upon in your brother's eyes as something where he would pat you on the back at the end that you survived and not only survived, but enjoyed.
Right. No.
None of that.
No, that's not so much. It wasn't like a passing of the torch moment or a merit badge moment.
I just played that scene in my head.
You are more optimistic and genuine than a lot of the people I have ever interacted
with.
I
also am a big fan of your brother, Schmave. But,
God, okay. don't say that, my lord. Two of you have a love affair. The Scream 2 came along.
If only we could make each other happy, Schmave. If only we would be the happiest men on the face of the planet.
I hate this.
If only that worked.
anyway, I think Scream 2 may have been the first sequel I ever saw at that point as far as a horror sequel goes. So again, while not a horror-specific idea, it was the genre of horror that introduced the young Mike 1 to the idea of cinematic universes in general. Mm-hmm. And it was an idea only further perfected to my adolescent mind when the killer in Scream 2 was revealed. Total shocker to me. My first true jaw-dropping moment in cinema. And it may be laughable now, but it was something I absolutely didn't see coming because it just didn't happen in that way at that point. Characters were supposed to be from film 1 to film 2. We weren't supposed to get a new one introduced who had been so plausibly behind the scenes all along. We definitely weren't supposed to lose a main cast member along the way, both of which had their doors blown off for me as a result of Scream 2. So Scream, the franchise, Scream 1 started a love affair with the genre, but I absolutely credit Scream 2 with deepening my interest in film and exposing me to just exactly what could be possible with a solid script and good acting. And so I credit both of those. That's a franchise very near and dear to my heart and responsible for the Mike 1 that you hear today.
You should do like a Q&A at a festival with that. That's great. That's great. That would play very well to the appreciation crowd.
I'd like to fill in for Wes Craven here. I'll take the torch. Thank you. If anyone has any questions about this franchise, I feel capable of answering them.
Well, that's great. Write the Scream 6 for Kevin Williamson. Let him run with that.
Yo, Kevin Williamson, I got ideas. Let's get this done. I need a conclusion for
this series.
Have you
heard our guest the plot? Come on. It goes without saying. Do we have to really sell ourselves after that?
You're number one, Mike, in horror.
All right. Now, I've mentioned a lot of positive experiences.
Yes.
And I was the older brother in my last negative experience, taking my younger brother to a movie where I think he thought he was cool, right?
Right.
Which would be natural.
You were the one giving the merit badges as you.
I was being I was in the Schmave role here, you know, defining your life's favorite moment or my brother's life's favorite moment.
I'm just glad older brothers don't have an ego problem.
Right. Yeah. Except I took him to the wrong movie.
I
took him to Lady in the Water.
Yeah.
And I was not a Rotten Tomatoes guy back then. I didn't realize the bad reviews. I had just love The Sixth Sense, love Signs, love one of M. Night and The Village. And even though The Village I didn't love, I thought it worked on me as in a movie experience. Loved Unbreakable. Huge fan of M. Night. We go to Later in the Water, and of course you got a lot of the same kind of level goods. And I don't know, this is a critically shat upon film.
Right.
You have a very dramatic performance by Paul Giamatti. And I think this is where most of the inappropriateness came from. Because you have that performance, and then you have this bedtime story coming to life. Now, this premise could work, especially when you got a scary bedtime, legendary fairy tale bad guy, or in the wolf in this case, coming to life along with it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is in the execution and the explanation. Because when she is called like a narf. My brother Dave, my brother Shmave, cannot handle that. My brother Dave is like the clown in the family. He's the Chris Farley-like younger brother.
Very good with one-liners,
Gets his and of course, you know, he's with his older brothers. And I forget if I think I had like a friend or two. I definitely had my other older brothers with me. So we are together. We're, you know, he's the fourth and five boys. And we're all together watching this movie. And I think to impress us, he is making us laugh. Every time Paul Giamatti does something goofy, he's making us laugh. So, okay. And it's encouraging him every time we laugh.
Right.
It's so much more encouraging when the rest of the theater laughs. He is hamming it up. There's a point in this movie, like towards the end of this movie, where he is getting up, hunched over, and basically slapping his knee just for the amusement of the rest of the audience, who somehow agreed in like some kind of hive think that this is a terrible movie. We would rather laugh at the fat kid.
We paid an admission to watch Dave stand up.
The fat kid in the front row with all of his fat brothers will be more entertaining to us than the actual film on display. So something happens at the very end of this movie that is so bad that Dave is just in tears. And all he could say is what happened. He just over and over again like a mantra. And every time he says it in hysterical laughter, we laugh harder. And he literally gets out into the aisle. And I knew that the people are having a good time with it, but I kind of look around. I don't necessarily see people laughing that much. I wonder if the tide has turned against him, if he's gone too far. The movie's over. I'm like, guys, we gotta go. And we're all laughing. He is just in hysterics. He can't breathe. He's laughing so hard. I literally bear hugged him and dragged him out of the movie theater.
Protected him for his own good.
And I have tears in my eyes.
Right.
So I really don't have a read on what the rest of the theater's vibe is. If they just want us to get the fuck out of there or if they're enjoying it. The last few people who I see before I leave the theater, and I'm bear hugging.
Dragging him out, yeah.
Dragging him out, and he's having fun with it. It's not like I'm being a jerk, but they have tears going down their face. So maybe I misread the situation entirely. Maybe we had another 5 minutes.
You always leave them wanting more, though. That's a good move on your part.
But I did. It kind of turned into the end spectacle of it all, me dragging him out of there, afraid that he's ruining the movie for some film snobs like I thought I was going into that. Because I'm in film, you know, I'm going to school for screenwriting. I'm going to all these film festivals. Here, as an older brother, as a curator of good movies, I'm taking my younger brothers to this really scary movie. And of course,
and he's like, no. This is my moment. This is my stage.
This is that he killed it. He crushed it.
That's amazing. And that's what good, well, in that case, bad horror. But that's what horror should be.
It was one of the best laughs of my life, if not the best laugh of my life. I can't remember another time laughing harder than that one.
That's amazing. And I know exactly, I can envision in my mind your brother putting on that type of performance and just feeding off the input from the crowd. If he finds one person to laugh at him, he's going off.
I literally couldn't look back at a group of people because tears running down my face and laughing so hard in the wind tunnel in my ears that I couldn't get what the whole crowd was doing.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yes. That actually kind of bleeds into my number one, too, which is more of a meta statement and kind of a love letter to horror in general. But as far as that's what bad horror is capable of.
Yeah.
Good horror is also capable of being so much more than just the genre. And my number one, of course, is Nick Cage in The Wicker Man. It's the gift that keeps on giving. No, it's not. It's a joke. My number one is, I titled it The Sixth Sense, Saw, Get Out, and being pants-shittingly, horrifyingly scared together.
Yes.
Good horror, to me, should be something that leaves an indelible mark. It's something that should disturb you. It doesn't have to be overly gory, but it can be. It doesn't have to be with grotesque monsters, but it can be. Good horror is something that, like that old saying about rectangles and squares, it may not necessarily be those things, but those things absolutely can always lead to good horror. Great horror becomes an event.
Yes.
It becomes a social phenomenon, whether something that resonates through your echo chamber wherever you exist, something that takes your school or friend circle by storm, or in these days, something that makes the internet explode. Great horror is something that is responsible for inside jokes, long-drawn-out philosophical and sophomoric conversations, and for the title becoming its own Pandora's box full of subtext. I'm hoping that's what Us becomes in a couple weeks. If I were to say to you, just get out right now, we'd have a flood of conversation points.
Well, definitely
get out. Topics yeah. we could talk
I mean,
about.
Us, I mean, those are some high stakes you're raising for it, but you're right. We you know, we'll talk about that to kind of put a cap on this
right.
thing. You're right. If it's working at its best, oh my God,
becomes
we're gonna
moment.
Be we're
yeah.
gonna be just, you know, basically high-fiving everybody in the movie theater next week.
There's been three times in my life that I think good to great horror has kind of shaken the foundation of my day-to-day existence.
Yeah.
These are my experiences. It could be different for other people. I understand that because they're not the three of the greatest horror movies ever made. Well, in so, some ways they are.
Yeah, I mean, you're also you know, captured by your
sure. where
time.
You are in your life. Yes, absolutely.
And
the backdrop against which you see these movies.
Yep. Right?
Where have you heard that before? So the first time was The Sixth Sense in theaters in 1999. New director M. Night Shyamalan unleashed what was his first and arguably finest piece of filmmaking unto the world in a little film featuring Bruce Willis, psychologist, trying to figure out what's going on with the young kid who sees dead people.
I will just say the scariest tidy whities I've ever seen in a film. Just the scariest. I've never been more. I think I switched to boxers after that moment.
I'm done with this.
It's at the very beginning of The Sixth Sense, so it's not really a spoiler, and I'm being vague.
So but Seven when, made you throw out the DVD, but The Sixth Sense made you throw out all your underwear.
All my underwear. But bottom line is, when I saw this, probably as a junior or senior in high
right.
school, or I think it was a little bit younger, might have been sophomore. I built up, but I saw this at home on DVD. I did not see this in theaters, and that scene scared the ever living crap out of me with the tidy whities.
Dude, I'm with you because that's the whole point of this and why I consider it great horror. It's the most scared I've ever been in a theater. As soon as that ghost walks by, it's one of the first scares of the movie.
Right.
So I was frozen for 2 hours after this, but as soon as that first ghost walks by Haley Joel Osment while he was peeing, and we saw the ghost walk by the bathroom, and then he approaches it in the kitchen, and she turns around. I had to stare at the ground just to catch my breath. It's the most scared I've ever been in my life. I don't know why, but it was just so suspenseful and unexpected.
I
became the butt of many jokes, and rightfully so, amongst my friends. It was my descent moment that you just shared with your brothers, except it's how I was through school, because I saw it with a couple other friends that I went to school with. And that's what great horror should be. It created a moment for us all to bond over and bring us together.
Nice.
And yes, I was the butt of the jokes, but I understood it was all in good fun. It was all something that we could share together. The same goes for the first time I saw Saw 1, the first Saw movie, the ending of the Saw movie. I remember watching that movie with a few friends the first week in theaters. I was warned ahead of time that something crazy happens. They didn't tell me when. They didn't tell me it was the finale. They didn't tell me anything. I'm sure by now we all know the big twist in the first Saw movie. But I'm not going to spoil
it. You're not
going to
spoil it. You're right.
After seeing the big finale, it was all that was talked about in my high school for like a solid 2 weeks afterwards. It was like this very huge moment that all of us were able to share together. And it got us talking about screenwriting. It got us talking about the horror genre in general. It got us talking about movie making. It was like this incident, this moment we all could share and partake in together. And it was really cool that like you would walk up to my school was very, we were all very congenial with one another. It wasn't like very clicky, at least
okay,
not
cool.
at certain points. So
Now, did everybody spoil the movie for everybody else? This sounds like a spoiler. Like
I think I probably spoiled it for a lot of people.
My butt clenched 5 minutes ago. That noise was my butt clenching 5 minutes ago because I have not done my spoiler warning dance music yet when you almost spoiled Saw.
Right.
So did you spoil it for all those kids?
I'm sure I must have spoiled it for some people. I have such a loud mouth and I always have.
Yeah.
So I'm positive there were people that overheard it and like have
you just realized
nasty words written about it. I'm not. I know it. I accept that about myself. I get it. I'm loud.
All of the spoiled moviegoers left in your path, in your wake.
But again, great horror is a social glue. At its best, it becomes a talking point for everyone around you. Sometimes it's due to its scares. Sometimes it's due to twists you don't see coming. And on super duper rare occasions, it can be due to social statements the movie itself makes. And that was the case with Get Out.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talked about it at length 2 years ago. Still maybe the most socially relevant movie of the past 3 years. What once was happening through the echo chambers of elementary and high schools happened once again with a great horror movie, but this time throughout the internet and social media at large. Every social media site, every pop culture website, every clickbait headline and ad was wrestling with the deeper meaning and relevance of what Jordan Peele's first directorial job had to offer. And it's something still discussed today, some 2 years later, certainly within MMO. We reference it all the time and at length, and I think for good reason. And that's the thing to me about great horror. It's the most unique genre in that it has the longest lasting impact when something truly outstanding in the field comes along. Think about Toni Collette last year and how film Twitter was all up in arms all throughout Oscar seasons as she kept getting overlooked. There's a reason people were that passionate about it. If you type the words global warming into Google, right?
Right.
You are met with 244 million results.
Okay.
If you type in the words Get Out explained, 2.63 billion results, more than 10 times as many as if you were to just type in global warming.
Okay.
Now, so what that says about our society aside.
That means our society is going to die. Wither and die. Unless we find...
The social construct of that, put it on a shelf for a
space
second.
Space planet out. This is why
I understand we are screwed. But on the way to being screwed as a society,
yeah.
we're going to get some badass horror movies, which should give us at least 90 minutes of recluse, I guess.
Yeah. So we have horror movies as a great conduit for deeper meaning, for thematics.
It's a catalyst for conversation.
We have talked about this many times before. Sometimes a horror film is the one of the more moral films that we have.
Sure.
One of the best ethical treatises that we're going to see in movies that year. I wonder why this is. It's just like a little side conversation to end this thing. Because we're so vulnerable, we're dealing with fear, which is a primal emotion. The movie breaks us down. Our hair is down.
I think you're hitting on it right there.
Do filmmakers basically include, all of the big news of the day in the metaphors of the killers and whatnot? Do they do this because we are just vulnerable to all of the doctrine at that point, to the themes? We are receptive, maybe is a better word. Because bottom line, Mike, is we often see some of the best satire hit in a horror comedy. We also often see some of the best ethics hit in a horror movie. This has been true for a long, long time.
In the way that you talked about the director to the orphanage, seeming like a child and having that childlike interaction with you where you were just so both overjoyed to be sharing that moment together.
Right.
I think conservative Democrat, when you give something so relatable as just pure fear, it's such a relatable feeling. It really does a lot to kind of break down barriers. And even something as divisive as liberal racism, which was what was hit on by Get Out, because it was presented in a way that was bone-chillingly scary, bone-chillingly relatable, I think that's why
something, it was bone-chilling.
Something like Captain Marvel has... Yeah, it was. Something like Captain Marvel has more of a backlash than something as kind of volatile as Get Out's subject matter, because I think we all are just capable of feeling that way together.
Yeah. And you can all recognize the game, the level of the gamesmanship by Get Out.
I agree.
If you disagree with what's being said, how it's being said is just so...
And that's why I think the term transcend the genre is bullshit. you can't transcend the horror genre, because the horror genre at its best, I would say inarguably, has the longest lasting impact than any other genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you're going to have your Scorsese's, your Tarantino's. You're going to have these movies that are talked about at length for all these years to come. But so is Silence of the Lambs. So is Get Out. So are all these other types of like transcendent, quote unquote, horror movies. And those are the ones that kind of spur on the most social conversation, I think. And if the point of movies is to be a reflection of the year in which you see them, the ones that can most...
movie awards, maybe, like we talk about?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's how you should judge them, right? You should see them against the backdrop of the year of which they were presented. Mm-hmm. I think that's the ones that can spur the most social change, is the horror movies. And those changes start with conversations. And those conversations start because the movies are so relatable, maybe because we are all scared of the same things.
So to bring this full circle with us, we are doing a preview episode of that film. I don't know if we've released it already.
Yeah, we may have. I don't know.
We are going to have a production meeting after this dual recording to figure out when we're doing that. And we've kind of made it a running joke at this point. That is not funny. Mike, we don't know
when. We're good at that.
We're good at that. We're great at that. Bottom line is, Us is coming out next week.
Yeah.
And we're getting really excited about it. We're hyping ourselves up about it with these two episodes. And I wonder, based on the reviews that I'm reading, and I'm being careful. I'm not reading them all. I listened to a couple pods. I read the Rotten Tomatoes page a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think my expectations are getting somewhat tempered at this point, because I know it's going to be good. It's going to be well made. I'm not expecting as scary a movie as perhaps Get Out was, but at the same time, it might get there. And I'm expecting a movie that's going to be a bit hard to pin down thematically, which is a surprise at the end of the day, because the last one was... it was clearer. And I figured his first movie would have not as been as clear.
Was it? I don't know.
Think, dude, with Get Out, to me, like, that first layer is clear. That second layer is clear. There's another layer that takes a while to figure out. But the first two are...
I feel like with Get Out, all I knew was something's going on with the family. I feel like with this movie, all I know is something's going on with the doppelgangers. Like, I feel like I am just as ill-equipped to this is going to shock you, to guess about what the plot is, then, or equally as ill-equipped than I was with Get Out. I don't really think I have a good handle of what's going on, other than Jordan Peele seems to highlight issues that need highlighting in a way that's more efficient than many other filmmakers have. At least he did with Get Out. And I'm kind of expecting that. But something to be highlighted.
My question for you, though, is coming out of the theater after Get Out, do you feel like you had it pegged, or do you feel like you needed to rewatch it a couple times?
I mean, I feel like I felt like a bad person. Yeah, if that makes sense, you know? I mean, I felt like it was an issue worth highlighting. I felt like I was watching something special. No, do I feel like I had it all figured out? No.
No.
I think I needed a couple more rewatches.
But you felt like you got the gist of it.
Yeah,
Bottom line, it wasn't like Hereditary or Mother where you're like, WTF.
No.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think this movie might be more of a WTF based on what the critics I'm reading. So that may be reason for the kind of the 70. They know it's good. The 70 audience score.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Because I don't think it would be lauded as a potential award contender like it has been if it was not palatable for a wide audience.
Perhaps, but South by Southwest loves to love
their
movies.
That's true. They do.
The 50,
they're only very movie friendly.
Only 50 out of the 200 or so critics that wind up contributing to that tomato score have reviewed it thus far.
I think if you're trying to say there's reason to temper expectations, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
And I think that's most indicative of that is the IMDb score. It right. being a 7-something, which we talk about in the Get Out 100% Accurate Guess the Plot.
So really, who knows what we're going to get out of Us? I mean, at the bottom line. I mean, it might be one of those cerebral horror films. It might be one that works in a Wes Craven way on us. It might be one...
The way in which he attacks and has answered that it's not going to be Get Out and it's not going to be the same subject matter as Get Out really kind of intrigues me, because I thought we were getting along the same lines. We were going to get something that's a comment on racial issues and et cetera, et cetera.
The goal for our two hype episodes for Us, in my opinion, has been to kind of go on a roller coaster ride of audio entertainment to, at the end of it all, just numb you to everything you're gonna or you think you're gonna see, and basically go into us and just go along for the ride.
Just sit back and enjoy.
Don't have expectations.
I think that's probably the most fair. I did that with Get Out because, again, I didn't know what to expect, so I was like, all right, just give it to me,
right?
And it worked. So, yes, I think that is the best way to approach this. Again, though, we probably should have discussed the point of these episodes beforehand.
It just found its own purpose, unfortunately.
I'm joking. Yeah, no, I agree, I think that is the best way to approach this movie, and I cannot personally wait, and we want to know, obviously, the reason we framed this episode in this way is not only are you excited for us, but what is your greatest experience with horror? What is some of the things that you had that you went through with the genre of horror, any movie specifically, any moment specifically, highs or lows?
We'll read them on MMOW. We've been doing that a lot with MMO Asks in recent days and weeks, and you've been coming through and giving us a lot of great material writing our show because we need breaks.
Yeah, we're two people. We can't do this anymore.
We can't write this much copy.
I haven't seen anyone that's not you.
For us to be snarky and actually comment upon your fun stuff that we can be snarky to each other about, not to you about.
The door to this basement locks from the outside. Somebody find us. Yes, yeah. we do need a reprieve, and we appreciate you giving your input. But and more sincerely, too, we also really, really love reading what you guys present
it's fun.
Creatively. And you guys are quite the creative geniuses, and we think that merits highlighting, quite
frankly. We just did a Six Degrees thing, and Awkwafina got back to us on it herself. She's in the Six Degrees, so that's a highlight for us.
That doesn't make sense. She played along. That was awesome.
And I'll be honest with you, the two or three responses that we got immediately, like last week when we had the challenge laid out, were some of the best I've ever seen. And then I very quickly read through, you know, the Twitter thread. And some of the best responses we've ever seen.
Yeah, and if this one comes out next week, we have a new challenge for you. So go listen to MMOW and go check out the Six Degrees challenge that we have laid out there. Otherwise, guys, like we said, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your input, your experience with horror, your top five if you have them, your top three, your top one, whatever. And Michael, on this episode, give us some words of wisdom.
Yeah, just quite simply, I'm excited for us.
I think those are the wisest words we could have right now, yeah. Oh, God, if this is a letdown, what a waste of programming.
Well, that's why I'm trying to keep us somewhat tempered.
Guys, when reality sucks, come watch movies with us. Okay. That works on a couple levels, and we'll see you next time.
Such a dad joke, son of a bitch. See ya. Ha, ba, ba, da.